90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio. Streaming online at www.kkfi.org.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Good morning and welcome to Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. This month, the month of January, we start our community health series. The health of a community is directly related to the wealth of a community. Health education plays a vital role in improving the health of those who reside in the community. In Kansas City, this is very critical because, unfortunately, where you live plays an important role in how long you live. Our conversation has been based off of the Community Health Improvement Plan, the CHIP for Kansas City, and our first guest is going to be Dr. Devikia Malik, and she's going to be talking about prenatal health care. She's an assistant professor at UMKC, and she also works at Children's Mercy Medical Center and Truman Medical Center. And I would like to say congratulations for Truman having the first baby born of the new year in 2018. Good morning, Dr. Malik, and welcome to Cowtown Conversations.
Thank you, Joseph. It's great to be on the show.
So what is prenatal health care?
So prenatal care essentially means that when a mom is pregnant, that she goes to a doctor or a midwife and essentially has the pregnancy monitored through every trimester of her pregnancy, so that when the time comes for delivery, if there are any complications or anything unusual happens, that both the mother and the healthcare staff team is prepared.
What type of things are done during prenatal health care? What kind of tests or different things are run? What does it really consist of? Going in, weight checks, height checks, different things. What are actually done? Blood checks?
Well, correct. So when a mother usually comes in, you get a history, try to see, what kind of health problems she may have. For example, if she has diabetes or she has blood pressure, that does change the nature of the pregnancy in terms of how high risk it is. They do get blood work to, assess, things like, if they have any infections that may affect the pregnancy as well. They get ultrasounds. They usually get one around end of the first trimester to basically screen for risks of the baby having any sort of structural problems or having any sort of chromosomal problems like Down syndrome. And then usually around 20 weeks, they have another ultrasound to look at the baby's anatomy. And then through the pregnancy, they come at different intervals. It's usually every month initially, and it can get down to every week towards the third trimester, where they see the doctor. They get their they get their blood pressure checked, and they have their weight monitored. And even like just those simple visits, even for normal, healthy pregnancies, actually mean a world in terms of how those pregnancies turn out.
So when you look at prenatal health care, when should a woman start prenatal care? Is it something that, as you said a little bit earlier, is it just in the beginning? Is it called prenatal in the beginning, or is it something that goes all the way through the pregnancy?
They should start it as soon as they find out they're pregnant. I think that the earlier that we find that there are any problems, the more options exist in how we can manage it and the better control that we can potentially have in managing it.
Is prenatal health care something that's covered by insurance, or is it something a woman would have to self-pay for?
It is covered by insurance, though there are still people in our community who don't have insurance, so sometimes they do have to resort to self-pay.
So are there any federally funded programs for women who may have to self-pay that may help them? Does, the health department offer any programs to help with well-baby checkup, prenatal care? Are there any government programs out there for that?
Well, usually Medicaid is very good about helping women out in terms of prenatal care. The health department also does have lots of programs and options, and Truman itself has a financial services, which is actually very critical in helping a lot of these women who have lower resources. I think that a woman should not should not avoid prenatal care just because they don't have insurance, because there are a lot of opportunities and a lot of resources available for those women.
We hear some of the stories, you know, that women may not know that they're pregnant until, you know, sometimes 5 months through, sometimes
right.
they turn up in the ER and you're in labor, and I'm like, I'm in labor. You know, what are the signs that they should look at to kind of know that something else is going on during that time frame?
Right. Well, I think the key is that their menstrual period has stopped for a period of time. But I think that those stories usually are pointing at a bigger issue, which is that perhaps these women are in situations that do not support their pregnancy, and they feel the need to be in denial of it, or they feel the need to hide it. And I think that the fact that any woman's put in that situation, we as a community really have to wonder, if are we doing enough for mothers?
That's definitely so true. So when you find out you're pregnant and you may be taking other medications, how important is it to let your doctor know what medications you are taking?
Oh, it's critical, I would say. You know, the medications you can take can expose the baby to risk, and it doesn't always happen just in the first trimester. It can actually be more at risk in the second and the third trimester. And there are a lot of vitamin supplementation that we also encourage mothers to tell us about. Usually what I tell moms who are on, like, you know, sort of alternative vitamin supplementations is that there is very limited information, limited data, so they just have to understand that if they're going to take it, they have to understand there may be potential risks that we're not aware of.
When the woman comes in for her prenatal examinations, what is the goal of the prenatal screenings that goes in that they may do, like the amniocentesis, different things that may happen when they come in for those prenatal visits?
So I think you're talking in a very important part of prenatal care, which is aneuploidy screening. When I say aneuploidy, that's a doctory term for having the baby having abnormal number of chromosomes, and the one that we tend to put a lot of attention on is Down syndrome, because it's one of the more common ones that we do see. But when we're doing that kind of screening for Down syndrome, we're also looking for what is the risk of the baby having other structural anomalies. And we usually start it with the ultrasound I was talking about that happens in the end of the first trimester, where we look at the back of the baby's neck, because if it is ever thick, it actually suggests that there's an increased risk of the baby having a chromosomal problem or having, you know, structural problems like heart problems.
So if some of the test comes back to come back abnormal, would that be an indication that there will be a problem, or is it something that they'll say the doctor needs to maybe take a little bit closer look at some things?
And that's a great point. What I usually, most of the time, it's a kind of a test where there's an increased risk. It's not saying that the baby actually has a problem, and that's usually what I tell moms. There's an increased risk. Depending on how high that risk is, I usually counsel patients about the different options that exist. Usually the gold standard test is the amniocentesis, where we sample the amniotic fluid, and we usually do that after 15 weeks gestation. But there is another test that is gaining a lot of popularity. It's still a screening test, but it's the cell-free DNA. We're actually looking at DNA fragments that are coming from the placenta and from the baby that is circulating in the mom's blood, and there's a lot of very high technical things that basically look at whether that fraction is abnormal and suggests an increased risk for a Down syndrome. It's a pretty good test in a high-risk population. If a mom does test negative for it, there's a really unlikely chance that the baby would have Down syndrome or trisomy 18, which is another form of a chromosomal problem that's fairly prevalent in the community.
What are some of the questions that a woman should ask her doctor when they're ordering prenatal tests instead of, I know sometimes you go to the doctor and you have that question, but you either sometimes don't want to ask it because you may not feel comfortable asking that question, or it comes to you right as you're going out the door. What are some of the questions that they should ask the doctor when they're ordering tests?
Well, they should ask what the tests are. I find that with social media, I think a lot of our patients seem to look up and know what is actually being ordered and actually have a say or have an opinion about, you know, the tests that are being ordered. But they should ask what's being ordered and what kind of impact those laboratory tests would have on the pregnancy if they were abnormal. They should also ask, you know, if they have any questions about how often they're going to be seeing a physician. The one thing I always tell patients is that if they have questions, because sometimes when they see a doctor, they may have a million questions. They all, like, fly out the window. And I always tell them that either they should come in with written questions in a notebook, or that if they have a question and they think about it, you know, on the way back to work or home, that they should call us. You know, we're always available to answer questions. I encourage them to call our nurses or call even our residents to ask questions, because that's why we're here.
So you talked about earlier high risk factors. What are some of the high risk factors for pregnancy?
Well, I think the two most common that we see and that can be actually pretty devastating is high blood pressure and diabetes, which in turn is also related to some degree to obesity.
So if you have some of those high risk factors, how important then is it for you to ensure that you get quality prenatal care?
Well, I think even beyond prenatal care, I think it's important to plan your pregnancy. So I really encourage patients who do have those problems and know about those problems that they should actually see a doctor, an obstetrician, and even a high-risk specialist like myself when they're planning to get pregnant. Because, you know, especially with diabetes, if they don't have adequate control, you know, it does expose the baby to risk of miscarriage or having heart problems. With blood pressure, too, I think the critical thing is that they manage their blood pressure so they don't have any sort of kidney problems, things like that. And they need to talk to a doctor, understand that when they do get pregnant, what kind of risks they're going to be exposing themselves and the baby to.
So our phone line's open this morning. If you have any questions and you want to call in and ask a question, the number is 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI. So a little bit of a controversial question. We have so many states where marijuana is being legalized and women are reportedly using marijuana now. How might that impact their baby?
Well, that's a great question. A lot of the studies that we have seem to suggest that it can impact, just like smoking, low birth weight. It can increase the risk of preterm birth. But some of those studies are somewhat affected by the fact that moms were, again, using tobacco alongside marijuana, and also that they were taking other substances. So it's difficult to say. You know, there are some hard science studies that are suggesting that there are certain compounds in marijuana that may actually be beneficial to the placenta. So I think the answer I'm trying to give is that we don't know. But I think it is critical that a mom tell us that they're taking marijuana, because we can talk to them about at least smoking having an impact on pregnancy.
So that's, I know some of the research that I was preparing for the show says studies have shown potentially harming brain development, cognition, and lower birth weight for children whose mothers smoke marijuana. THC, which is the active ingredient in marijuana, can also be present in breast milk. The American Academy of Pediatrics and the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists both advise against prenatal cannabis use because of its links to cognitive impairment and academic underachievement. And that was something that was in the New York Times. So,
right.
And they said one of the other things that most troubling was children of mothers who used marijuana heavily in the first trimester had lower scores in reading, math, and spelling at the age of 14 than their peers. So it seems that, you know, the choices you make have a direct correlation and impact upon the child that you're going to have.
Right.
And the health of your health does a lot to hurt their health, but also their development going up down the road. So some of those things that you have to think about. If a mother is in a situation where she definitely needs help, but she doesn't know where to turn, what are some of the resources in Kansas City or in the metropolitan area where she can call, other than Truman, the health department? Can she Google certain things? What can she do to find help, to get find resources to help her during a pregnancy?
Well, if she doesn't go to Truman or to the health department, I mean, I think that any hospital is obligated to take care of her, and she should know that, especially if she's in a very difficult or an emergent situation. You know, whatever hospital she goes to, if they have the resources, that they're obligated to help her out.
And that's regardless of whether she has the ability to pay her health care insurance or not.
Correct. Correct. We owe it to that mother and to that baby to do what we can.
And also, if they're receiving federal funding, then they're obligated, since they have to.
Yes, they are.
They're obligated from that aspect. They can't be turned away if they're receiving federal funding.
Right.
So, how many appointments should a mother look at having for doing her time that she's going to be for prenatal care, from the time of the beginning of the pregnancy to the end of the pregnancy?
So I think she should, if she finds out that she's pregnant early on, she should immediately set up care with her physician. So some women find out very early, like 5 weeks. But initially, through the early part of the second trimester, they have to come in monthly. They should get their late first trimester ultrasound that I was talking about. They should get an ultrasound at 20 weeks. Around 24 weeks, then that increases to every 2 weeks that they're seeing the physician. And then usually by 35 weeks that they have to see every week. So it really depends on when they initiate the care. But as you can see, prenatal care is, you know, when they're getting prenatal care, that's a great time for a physician and a patient to really set up a relationship and get to know each other.
We have KKFI. Hold on. We've got a caller. Hold on.
Oh, did you go?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Anyhow, regarding the prenatal care, it also is a great time to see if anything develops. Pregnancy is sort of a stress test, so if anything goes wrong, if you're regularly seeing a physician, it will be, you know, a great time for the doctor to catch it.
Caller, are you there?
Yes, my name's Kurt from the East Side.
Go ahead, Kurt.
I was just wondering.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry?
Tell us your question, Kurt.
I have two questions. What about folic acid, and could you give us an update on the physician's efforts to make health care a right in this country?
Okay. His question was, he wanted to know about folic acid and the physician's ability to try to make things right in this country, the second one. You have to elaborate. Can you tell us a little bit about folic acid, the importance
of
folic acid?
Sure. Actually, that is an area that I you know, am actually currently trying to research. And actually, UMKC with Children's Mercy Hospital and the Department of Clinical Pharmacology is actually doing a lot of work on that. But we are, you know, folic acid is one of the best prophylaxis we have against congenital anomalies. That means when the baby has structural problems, and specifically for spina bifida, when basically the spine or the neural tube doesn't close. And folic acid is also happens to be a nutritional supplementation. So it's actually not necessarily a medication. It's a synthetic form of a folate that has helped and has been shown in trials to actually significantly reduce the rate of neural tube defects in the population. The trials that were performed in the 1980s and 90s actually showed that there was a reduction of up to 70% that actually prompted the U.S. government to, you know, actually supplement our grain supply with folic acid. So not only are reproductive women getting it, but, you know, everybody else is getting that additional folic acid, and has actually seen a 26% decrease in neural tube defects since starting that program.
And, Kurt, what was your second question? Repeat that for me.
The physician's efforts to make health care right in this country, single-payer health care.
Okay. And, thank you, Kurt, for your questions, Kurt. You can listen off there. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
He said his second question was about the doctor's ability to try to make single-payer health care correct, but I think that's a little bit more than – that's above the doctor's position at that point. I think that's going to be talking to your congressman, talking to your senator,
right,
talking to your – in Missouri, because Missouri is one of the one of the states that didn't expand Medicare or Medicaid,
right,
talking to your state representative, and also writing a letter to the governor, because the state legislature starts up next week, and that would be a great question to send to your state representative to let them know about expanding medical health care. So that's not one that, that unfortunately, the doctors would love to handle.
That's someone
that they can't handle.
I would love, yes. I will say that there are some organizations out there where physicians are trying to mobilize and work together to try to impact legislation and try to get better access to health care for the country.
Other than wheats and grains, what are other things that a woman may be able to take to ensure that she gets enough folic acid?
Well, vegetables. Usually general healthy eating is a great way to get not only folic acid, but also naturally occurring folates. So, you know, a lot of things like eating your leafy greens, you know. I would also say that, as we're saying, don't do low-carb diets when you're pregnant. I know that there's a huge fad for that right now in terms of, you know, ketogenic diets, but that's not something that is recommended in pregnancy. There have actually been a lot of studies over the past few decades that show that if you are not taking carbohydrates, you're exposing your baby to not growing properly. As much as that doesn't sound like you would think, oh, a protein-rich diet, you know, my baby should be able to grow great and nice and big and nice muscles and everything like that. Yes, you should have protein, but you should not exclude carbohydrates either.
I will say this, my daughter will probably kill me. She just had a little grandson.
Oh, really?
And I can tell you the chicken fingers in there, the French fries.
Oh, really?
were not part of the healthy diet when she was pregnant.
It's sometimes hard.
But what are some of the common things that you see working at Trimble Medical and Children's Mercy for those that may come in for prenatal health care?
Well, like common problems or?
Common problems, common occurrences, the things that can be prevented that we can talk about in the community that can really, the more we talk about, that we can look at helping people to be aware of, educating them on, that we can reduce that ability for that occurrence in the community.
Well, I think one thing they have to understand is that sometimes, because when you get prenatal care, you're seeing the doctor so often, and we're doing blood pressure so frequently, and they have to understand that these aren't just, you know, simple routine things, that these can give a lot of clues to how we expect the pregnancy to turn out. And that, first of all, getting prenatal care early is critical. But they should also know that they have a say. A doctor can come in and say, like, this is what we're seeing and this is what we think we should happen. But they should know that they are part of that decision-making process. They should never feel disenfranchised from the care that they're getting or what's happening to their pregnancy. And I think that that's one thing I always tell moms, especially when I'm counseling them about problems that we're encountering. It's like, well, these are the options that we see. And ultimately, sometimes these are a very personal decision, especially when we're talking about aneuploidy screening or, you know, Down syndrome screening. When we see abnormal results, I always tell them, you have to figure out personally, what are you going to do with that information? You know, this is what we will do with the information, but, you know, this is ultimately your pregnancy, and you should know that if you feel that you're just going to a doctor and the doctor's going to boss you around, that's not the case. The doctor is very curious about what is your attitude to this, how are you processing this, and that, you know, we are here to help you as much as we can. We're limited in what we can do sometimes. You know, for example, there are sometimes not employers that are as supportive of the pregnancy as we'd like, but there are things that we can do sometimes to ameliorate the situation.
So if you have a question, our studio number is 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI. So what are questions that a woman should ask a potential person who's going to be doing her prenatal care? I know some of us, we walk in, we don't ask the doctor any questions, but at this time they're caring not only for your life, but the life of your unborn child.
Right.
What are some of the important questions they should ask at that point in time?
Well, I think first they have to make sure that they are comfortable with the provider that they have, you know, that they have those questions. And if they're not, they can look around. You know, sometimes it is a matter of a personality fit. But the questions they should ask are, what are the things I can do when I go home to help the pregnancy? Usually I tell them it's the stuff that is common sense, like, you know, eat properly, you know, exercise. you know, in certain, as long as your pregnancy is not high risk, there was actually a Scandinavian study that showed that women who exercised 30 minutes a day actually had smarter babies. So, you know, things like that. Also asking about folic acid. Folic acid, you know, there was all this, you know, fury and rage about vaccines causing autism, but the thing that nobody really picked up on was that there was actually also a Scandinavian population study that showed that folic acid women who took it actually reduced the likelihood of their children developing autism. And so they should ask, like, what are the benefits? I'm doing these things, you know, how is that impacting my pregnancy in a good or a bad way?
You talked about vaccines. What type of vaccines should a woman get when she's pregnant? I know we've all had the measles, mumps, and rubella, but then at certain times you have to go back and get boosters. What types of vaccines do you need now that you're expecting a child, and what boosters may you need at the same time?
Right. Well, you know, if you're planning the pregnancy, you should make sure you're rubella immune so you're not susceptible to that, because rubella can have devastating consequences on a developing baby. But when you are pregnant, there are two vaccines that we do encourage, and one of them is the flu vaccine. That one actually, I think I hear it every other patient. They're like, oh, I get sick from the flu vaccine. You know, doctors don't have a choice. We have to get it regardless. And I always tell them that in the community, every year there is a mom who is just healthy, has a normal pregnancy, develops the flu, and ends up in the ICU on a ventilator because of it. You know, and so the flu vaccine, I think, is critical in pregnancy. You know, the flu in a normal, non-pregnant person, it may not be a big deal, but in pregnancy, it can be a big deal. We often, even if they seem fairly okay, we often admit them just because women can decompensate fairly, you know, very quickly. The other one is actually endorsed by the Center for Disease Control, which is the Tdap vaccine, which is tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis, pertussis being whooping cough. And we usually encourage that in the third trimester all the way up to 36 weeks. And that one is really important because now that we're having inconsistent rates of vaccination, a lot of the diseases that weren't around are starting to come back. And the one that we get worried about with babies is whooping cough. They don't get that vaccine for the first 2 months. And so, and we are hearing cases. I know there were cases in California of newborn babies passing away from pertussis, from whooping cough. So the CDC has actually encouraged mothers to get that vaccine because those antibodies that the mom produces will cross the placenta and protect the baby and even protect the baby after delivery. So
that's definitely a case where you want to, where more is better, that you want to definitely take those vaccinations,
right,
so that you can protect your unborn child.
Right. But it's really funny. To this day, I still have people who are vaccination skeptics. And I usually am fairly open-minded about a lot of things, you know, when moms have concerns about prenatal care and things like that. But vaccines, I think, is a very important part of the prenatal care, because we are seeing all these diseases that can make vulnerable newborns susceptible.
So as you are going through your pregnancy, how important is it in that last trimester? I know the New Year's baby that you all had was not expected to for New Year's. It was expected to be Valentine's Day.
Right.
How important is it for you to really pay attention to what's going on in the changes?
Well, I think that, you know, as I said before, pregnancy is a stress test. And I think when you really start seeing those problems is usually in the third trimester. So in terms of blood pressure, sometimes women get this phenomenon called either gestational hypertension, which can evolve to preeclampsia. Preeclampsia is a disease that's fairly common. I think it's about 5% of pregnant women are affected. I think it's higher in certain populations, such as African American women and mothers. And usually it tends to present itself in the third trimester, which is why it's critical you get your blood pressure taken regularly during the third trimester. If it is caught early, it can be something that, you know, we can potentially prevent devastating consequences, and the devastating consequences can be include maternal or fetal mortality from that. The other thing is that sometimes diabetes, you know, also can be a little bit more harder to manage in the third trimester, and sometimes can warrant also earlier delivery. So
we've got a caller. Caller, are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Can you tell us your name and what part of town you're calling from?
I'm from Overland Park. My name is Rich.
Rich, go ahead and ask your question.
I've worked with blind people, and one of the more common reasons people are blind is due to retinopathy of prematurity. Can the doctor discuss premature deliveries and what they can do and how they can be prevented and all the rest of that? Thanks.
Okay. His question was, he works with people who have no sight, mm-hmm. and he said, can you discuss how it can possibly be avoided or what complications could possibly cause that? As far as in...
in terms of that they were born without sight.
Correct.
And what could... Well, the big one worldwide is chlamydia. We are fairly vigilant about testing for that and treating it, but worldwide that is probably the one of the more common causes for that. There are other infections that are also associated with congenital blindness. There are also syndromes. Usually they're like some sort of genetic problem. Aneuploidy, as I talked to you, chromosomal problems, those also can be associated with blindness. But I think the critical thing and the most common and reversible one is chlamydia. And I think that right now, providers are fairly vigilant about testing for it initially, like when a woman comes in for a prenatal care, but also if there are any sort of risk factors to test again in the third trimester, especially when the baby may be exposed.
We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Support for KKFI by AEG Presents. Cellos Score World Tour, coming to the Sprint Center on January 21st.
You're fine.
Tickets available online at axs.com.
If you want, you can. That's why he's going to wear. Hold on. That's why I wear one on and one off so I can hear inside of here.
Secret history and moral cost of the iPhone, its global supply chain, and why it's called the one device.
You okay?
Then, after too many instances of sexual attack and harassment, Chicago Hotel members of Unite Here Local 1 got the City Council to pass the Hands Off, Pants On ordinance to protect them. Find out about how they did it Thursday at 6 p.m.
Sure.
We broadcast Friday at 5 a.m.
KKFI is sustained by generous listener support. Thank you for 30 years of belief in Kansas City Community Radio.
And we're back. So one of our off-air conversations, we were discussing, but I do want to ask one question before we kind of move on.
Sure.
How much, there's always been a question about weight gain during pregnancy, and what is a normal weight gain for pregnancy?
It really depends on what your starting weight is, but it's usually like 15 to 25. And you're only supposed to increase your calorie intake by 300 kilocalories, which is, I don't know, not very much.
I was reading something on that, and it said it's the equivalent of essentially a bagel and some peanut butter per day.
I think a bagel and peanut butter may even be more calories
than
that.
They said that's all you really need, and it's like, but that's not how some people see it.
So. Right.
Going back to that caller's question, what are some of the tests that really should be screened for at that first initial prenatal meeting? I know I've seen HIV.
Right.
I've seen some of the STD questions. Some of the STDs. Why are some of those so important to be screened for at that first prenatal visit?
Well, one of them I talked about was rubella. We want to know if a mom is rubella non-immune because, first of all, if she does get exposed to rubella, we are concerned about whether the baby is going to have any sort of structural problems or response to that. Also because after she delivers, then we do usually give the rubella vaccine. We also look for syphilis. Syphilis has been making a comeback. So we do test for that to see if the mom has been exposed. And that, again, can have devastating consequences on the baby structurally. And we also look at HIV. HIV is a big one because oftentimes moms have it and they're on medication. And we usually work very closely with infectious disease specialists to make sure that they're on a regimen that's not going to necessarily harm the pregnancy. And also make sure that, that you know, the mom, you know, is adequately taken care of for and the precautions are, you know, made in terms of making sure the reduction in terms of transmission is reduced.
So if you have a question, our studio number is 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI. So we were discussing what sickle cell, how does that begin to impact, especially if you may be pregnant, your ability to the prenatal care you need, at least number one, but also how may it hurt or impact the baby?
Well, I think sickle cell is something that does affect our community. I think that if a mother does have it, I think it's critical that we set up prenatal care early. Again, there's a theme going on there. But that we also be able to set up a multidisciplinary team to be able to take care of that patient. And that usually involves, heme-oncologists who do specialize in sickle cell to understand how anemic the patient is. Because if she is very anemic, that can impact the oxygen that the baby is getting as well. And then also for testing, you know, we have to make sure that the baby is, you know, not affected, if it does not have sickle cell. And, you know, that can be useful information for the expecting mom to know is what is the likelihood of my baby's also going to be affected.
What I know, there's a difference in between it can have the trait,
right?
Or it can come out two ways. If the mom does have sickle cell, the baby could end up having the trait, or it could have the full blown,
right?
Full blown sickle cell. What's the difference in case somebody does in that situation maybe want to know? What's the difference in between the two?
Well, the trait means that you essentially just have, it's a recessive gene. That means that if you have it, it's not the full-blown disease. So if you have the trait, I mean, there are certain things that you take precautions for in terms of the pregnancy and that, you know, you just you monitor for urinary tract infections. But it doesn't quite require the same sort of vigilance that a person with a full-blown disease has. You're not as anemic as you are with a full-blown disease. And so if a patient has a trait, I think we're more concerned about what is the risk, especially if the father of the baby has it, what is the risk of the baby being affected? And so that's an important consideration for expecting parents. If they have the full-blown disease, you know, oftentimes these mothers are quite anemic. You know, you have to watch their anemia very closely, have to work with hemoncologists. You have to make sure that they are adequately vaccinated, that they don't have any infections that can result in a sickle cell crisis. Their pain is adequately controlled if they need pain medication. A lot of these moms are dependent on narcotics, and so that also is a whole other issue with the pregnancy. We have to often have them meet with a neonatologist to understand that their babies are at risk of withdrawal after delivery, and also make sure that their pain is well controlled during the pregnancy and during labor.
Studio number again, in case you had a question, is 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI. So if the father of the child has the trait and the mother of the child would have had the trait, then there's a greater chance that the child could have full-blown sickle cell in that situation in case.
Correct. Yes. There is a chance that there's a 25% chance that the baby would have it.
What are some of the other diseases that you may see that can be that are really important to look out for and screen during a pregnancy?
Well, I think, as I said, the really, really big ones are diabetes and blood pressure. But I think one that we are seeing more and more often is there are mothers out there who, they lose their pregnancies. They don't have a good explanation why. And oftentimes that is the first sign of autoimmune disease, which is much more common in women than in men. And pregnancy sometimes exposes that. As I said, it's a stress test, so they may not have it otherwise, but but suddenly, like, they're losing their pregnancies for whatever reason. They keep on having miscarriages. I always tell them that it's important to test for antiphospholipid antibody syndrome, which is a fairly common autoimmune disease. And sometimes, depending on the other problems going on, also to think about lupus. Whenever I always tell my residents and my medical students that whenever you see old people disease and young, healthy people, you have to think about autoimmune disease. And sometimes we do see that in our pregnant mothers who are coming in to get care.
So it's definitely, we have a caller, hold on.
Oh, yeah. And another thing also is smoking cessation is another thing to discuss with a patient. You know, we do have an increased prevalence of smoking in the community, and I think that trying to work out strategies to stop it is actually also critical.
Kurt, we have Kurt calling back on line one. Kurt, go ahead. What's your question for the doctor?
She talked about her patients being skeptical. I was wondering if she would like to discuss historically why African Americans are skeptical of medical care. Number two was, are black female OBGYNs well represented in the Kansas City metro? And there's a follow-up on Rich's question if you have time.
Sure, and you can listen off there. Thank you for the question, Kurt.
I think those are two excellent questions. Well, first I want to deal with the second question, which is African-American women, are if they're well represented. I think generally speaking, I think that we could use more women of color in this profession. I think that I think becoming a physician, there is a little bit of privilege that's involved. And I think that there's also some level of cultural literacy that's involved in being a good physician or having a perspective. And I think that a lot of the recent press on maternal mortality, especially affecting African-American women, I think there is that concern that perhaps we're not empowering women of color to really be well represented in the healthcare in the healthcare field. I know of African-American women who are OBGYNs in the community who are excellent, and I think that I think we could work on that as a medical community and making sure they're more well represented. Now, in terms of the skepticism, I also think that comes from a similar sort of world where you expect, when you think about a physician, you think of a very specific image demographically, you know, typically a male, you know, as a woman doctor. I mean, I think most women doctors will say they have been mistaken for not being a doctor many, many times. And I think that changing that image will be critical to that. But I think it's also not dismissing and understanding that people express their pain or their concerns in very different ways. And so I understand where there are some skepticism in terms of the medical care they can get. I remember I had a patient who did not want vaccines because she actually specifically thought they were targeted against the African-American community in terms of causing autism. And I understood where her distrust of that came from. You know, historically, there have been experiments done specifically targeting African-Americans. And, you know, they work in a system that where they feel victimized. You know, and I can see where they're coming from when they come and see a physician and they're saying, well, I don't completely trust everything that you're going to be offering me. And I think our job is to acknowledge that, you know, they come from a very different world and a very different standpoint, understand that they are going to express certain things differently, and then do our best to address those issues and address those differences and be the doctors that we should be for the community.
That is very well put, because it's, if we forget the past, then we fail to remember the things that happened, but it's also those things that happened that put the stereotypes and different things into play, but we can only stop those things one at a time. So knowing that the vaccinations that you're going to get are for the best benefit of you during your pregnancy, but also for your baby. So sometimes there's a little bit of work taken to knock down those walls.
Right.
but they should know that the doctor is working there for the best interests of you and for want you to have a healthy baby.
Right. But the doctor should also acknowledge that they understand their point of view when they come in with some skepticism.
Yes, most definitely, because then you're showing them that you're listening to them and that you're understanding what they're saying, and that you're, most importantly, you're hearing what they're saying.
Right.
And sometimes when you go to the doctor, forgiving, but it's like cattle being herded. You go in, you got your 10 minutes.
Right.
you tell, if you miss that one question, if you got that doctor, he's like, he'll tell you, he or she will tell you, you know, you got 15 minutes. Whatever you can get out in 15 minutes, if not, make another appointment. But, you know, during your pregnancy is the most important time that you should be able to ask those questions and get those questions answered to put you at ease.
Correct.
So, as we begin to wind down, do you have any important information that you want to relay to women who are pregnant, or thinking about getting pregnant, things that are very vital to ensure that they have a healthy baby?
Well, the most important thing is make sure you take your prenatal vitamins when you're thinking about getting pregnant. As I talked about, folic acid is something that is nutritional prophylaxis against congenital anomalies. That means the baby having any structural problems. It has been shown to help with neural tube defects, as I talked about, but it also has been shown to potentially reduce the risk of the baby having heart problems. There is also data to suggest it could also improve perinatal outcome or how the pregnancy turns out in terms of reducing the risk of potentially preeclampsia and preterm labor. So the earlier you start that, the more likely you're going to get a really good risk reduction from that. The other thing is to go and see somebody right away and go find somebody you're comfortable with and somebody who will make you feel heard. You know, this is a process. This is not somewhere where you go and a doctor's going to tell you what to do and that's that. This is a process between you and your doctor. It's a fluid relationship. You know, the doctor will be wanting to know what you're comfortable with, and you should know that you have certain powers over that too. So,
I know that a lot of people, they may wait, but as you said, the most important time is when you think you're pregnant to go see the doctor. You know, I know a lot of people may think that they don't want to pay for the pregnancy test, but I know they give those at the health department,
right.
So they're free. So cost is not a concern in this point in time, because the resources out there will allow you to get it for free. You know, we have our smartphones. We can Google. There's so many different things. The health of your unborn child determines not just when they're inside of you, but it so much impacts what's going to happen when they are born, but not only when they're 5 to 10, but they're 15, 20, and down the road. So the things that you do now are so important.
Right.
To ensure that you have a child who can grow up, who's healthy, strong, and happy and vibrant.
There's actually been a lot of focus right now in research and trying to figure out ways to reduce chronic disease, such as heart disease, later in life through managing pregnancy, because a lot of the decisions, and it's a lot of pressure on moms, but a lot of the decisions that they are making with their pregnancy and what they're eating and how they're treating their pregnancy is going to impact their babies for their entire lives.
And some of the things that we see in the Community Health Improvement Plan and the CHIP for Kansas City, you know, prenatal care was one of the things which is what drove me to do this show. Prenatal care in the African American community was one of the factors that the city was trying to reduce, but also it begins to, as you said, come down the road later when you begin to see cardiovascular incidents, you begin to see higher risk of diabetes, and children that may be born to a mother who may have diabetes will have a greater chance of possibly down the road of developing diabetes. And those are things that can be, if you work on them now, things that you may not have to worry about later.
Correct.
So those are definite. So as we begin to look at is there any other advice that you may be able to give to a mother to be able to look at, you know, we look at diabetes, the things that can be maybe mitigated. What other things can we begin to definitely make sure we want to do to ensure that we have a healthy, happy baby?
Well, you know, I actually don't want to drive this at mothers, but society at whole, is that I think we need to support our mothers. You know, I think definitely, you know, I feel that women, regardless of their circumstances, don't feel supported when they're pregnant. You know, they come in with either familiar problems or work problems. And I think it's our job when we see a mom who's expecting that we understand that she is literally bringing in the future of this country, and we owe it to her to do what we can to make it as easy and healthy as possible.
And that means that if you're going to be a child has two parents.
Right.
So it's sometimes the other parent's responsibility to have to do some of the washing, do some of the things so that the mom can have a time to sit down.
Right.
Because the more that she's up in stress, the more the baby's going to be stressed.
Right.
So you have to sit, and it takes two to parent. And you want to make sure that child has the best relationship, the best healthy outcome coming out. And that is based on you having a good relationship and those two parents working together.
And it's not just the two parents. I think it's the community at
yes.
large. You know, every baby that's born is the entire community's responsibility. And if we have that attitude towards moms and the children that they're raising, I think that we'd be a very happy, different country.
The old adage, it takes a village to raise a child.
Right, exactly.
And the village expands. The more children we have, the more the village expands. Because I can remember growing up, it wasn't just my parents that got on me. It was the people down the street that saw me doing wrong. So sometimes all of us have to pitch in it, because that child, as you said, is our future. So
right.
If we don't shape it, then our future can have those problems.
Right.
So as we've got about a couple minutes left. We'll seem to have taken a few more calls. 816-931-5534. The studio number is, again, 816-931-5534. So we are working on getting these things down, but as they plague different parts of the city, where you live determines how long you will live, but these are things that can be changed based off of just getting quality health care. And the affordable health care is out there. Everybody now should have insurance. There's Medicaid, Medicare. And if you, as our caller called in earlier, you know, if you believe that there's different things, it's not the doctor's responsibility. It comes back to your state senator, your state representative, the governor in the case of Missouri, to expand Medicare, Medicaid. You know, your United States senator, United States representative, they're looking at the Affordable Health Care Act. Even though there were a lot of changes done this year to the Affordable Health Care Act, over 20 million people signed up more than last year, even though the period was shorter. So it's being informed, being knowledgeable, and getting out and doing what you need to do to ensure being a part of that. So that's the things that we can all do.
Along those lines, I actually also think that it's important to not only civically engage in terms of access to care, but also in support of mothers. You know, right now, we're the only developed country that does not give paid maternal leave. We have FMLA, but that doesn't even really impact, you know, everybody. Not everybody can benefit from that. And I think that, again, that goes to our philosophy as a society, as a country, as a community, in terms of supporting mothers and allowing them to be the mothers that they can be to their babies.
So I want to thank Dr. Malik for coming on and being our guest today in Cowtown Conversations. So if people have a question or they're having a baby, you know, how do they get a hold of someone at Truman to make an appointment? Is there an appointment line down there in OBGYN or someone? How will they be able to get a hold of that? I think the main number is 404-1000
right.
for the main, so they could call the main number 404-1000, or they could also.
There's also a website where you can easily
go to the website, which is I think it's tmc.org,
right?
And go there and look at getting some information but also they can go to the Kansas City, Missouri Health Department and get information there. So you can look that up at kcmo.org.
Right.
So those are definite sources where people can get information to get more information on prenatal care, but also access to healthy health care. So we never end without our community minute. The 50th anniversary of the Martin Luther King commemoration will be one this weekend at Johnson County Community College. It will be Sunday, January 7th from 3 to 5 p.m. at Carlson Center, Yardley Hall. The keynote speaker will be Ryan M. Jones, who is an historian with the National Civil Rights Museum in Memphis, Tennessee. And the special guests and performances will include the Storing Dance Theater, William Baker Festival Singers, Mr. Galen Gott, and Dr. Cynthia J. Mama Johnson. And everybody knows Dr. Mama Johnson. She worked with the school district on helping up the middle schools, and she loves her middle school students. So this is going to be, again, Sunday, January the 7th from 3 to 5 p.m. For more information, you can contact Vivian L. Alvary, the event chairperson, at 913-522-5822. So there's going to be a lot of good information coming out. So also, the Builders Association is offering free apprenticeship program, Earn While You Learn program for the construction industry. This is a program, not just a job, that will lead to a career in over 15 different trades, and you can earn college credits while you're learning. If you can like more information, you can go to their website, which is www.buildersassociation.com, or contact Ramon Holt, Outreach Manager, at 816-595-4145. So join us again next week as we continue our conversation, and we will have representatives from the American Heart Association, and we'll be discussing heart health. So for Cowtown Conversations, I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Tune in next week.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI Kansas City Community Radio.
90.1 FM, KKFI Kansas City.